finally meet the three. Now I feel like a true minority now.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture. Each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers!
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in.
You know, just to call out specifically, you mentioned about just art, and I just wanted to shout you out. I think when we first started the podcast, yes. I remember mentioning it to you, and you know, you had heard it, and out of the blue, you had sent this collage that you had made for the podcast. And I think you incorporated like the Vegans, OnlyFans, and Simps title and everything, and it was just so cool to say, oh wow, like you've been able to create this some sort of mural image that just looked and encapsulated everything that we had. So shout out to you from being very early
that
day listener. Awesome. Thank
100%.
You. I think if possible, we'll try and use this the image of that on the on the release 100%. As well. That would be cool.
That'd be cool.
Did you sign it, right?
Do you know what? One thing I will say
I don't
is,
remember. Maybe
it,
I didn't.
One thing I will say, it was an incredible image, but it was wacky as hell. Like it had some wild stuff on there. And imagine, we hadn't met you, we know nothing of you other than what Mo had told us. So the image, again, it goes back to this image of China that I had in my head of quite professional and rigid and everyone standing in queues and all this. But then I saw that and I was like, whoa,
this is wild. It's not going to allow you to show it.
This is super wild, yeah. But again, incredible image, man. Like, it's clear that you are good at what you do. Very, very clear. Like if you can do something like that, that's just sort of off kilter, as opposed to doing something for work that you're getting paid for and that you actually have some enthusiasm to do. Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
man.
Thank you.
We got a almost manga artist here as well, right?
Oh, yes. Almost 10. Which one?
Almost
Which 10. One?
You.
Oh, right, me. Okay.
You.
Almost. That almost is a lot. That if it says, who is this? Studio Ghibli. Between me and Studio Ghibli, in between that, there's like about 10 Marvel.
Wait, you legit drew manga?
not legit. I show you a couple of stuff I
Whoa.
Just drew this week. It's I wouldn't say manga. It's like now I allow myself for about a minute or so for each one.
What's the Chinese version? Manhua? That's Korean?
Manhua. But yeah, that was one of my week. So I think that's one of the day.
Nice. Okay. Well, can we get a description for the listeners?
Okay, yep. Now I feel there's... Is that poo or is that
cake? Someone's talking poo, and the poo's in a speech bubble.
And it's taking time, and then there's the clock there. So you feel like people are just chatting wet. Okay.
Yeah. And then later that week, that was...
nice.
Okay, is that after the MMA classes that you did?
It was, I forgot exactly what, but it's kind of like I had some rage saved up from the beginning of the week and then somehow get weirdly released, either MMA class or I made a savage joke to someone.
And they didn't laugh.
They
didn't find it funny.
That's the thing. I got super insecure at the beginning when nobody laughed at my joke. But now I think I'm gaining a new energy, which is to owning it up. I actually have once, you know, there is one guy who So basically, it's a group chat. It's just some guy all of a sudden inviting a bunch of random people who never talk to each other to this group, say we're gonna do something, and nobody really understood what's his point. And then I think at one point I just made a joke about him, but I was expecting to amuse the rest of the people in the group. But he didn't know that. He one-to-one says, "Stella, what you said was incredibly rude." I was like, "I'm sorry, it was supposed to be a joke." We're like, "Oh, well, I don't find it funny." I'm like, "Oh, well, you're not the audience of my joke. You're the subject."
Savage.
And then I feel always extremely good, like after that. And yeah, so maybe I did one of those things, and I feel like...
May I ask, what's been the female Chinese experience working in the UK? Like, have you, because you're doing quite well for yourself, and have you had to shatter glass ceilings? Have you come across any glass ceilings?
Well, there's a lot of glass ceilings. Now I'm extremely happy. Now I feel I'm happy where I am. But back then, when I was doing more graphic design stuff. So if there's a little bit of context here, now I'm more doing digital product design. So in this realm, it's more evidence-based. So research-based and evidence-based decision-making process. So, you know, like the stereotypes, like if people are data-driven, then it doesn't matter where I come from, how do I look like. But in graphic design, How did you quantify a logo? How did you evaluate an advertise? You know, you can't put number on it. It's all based on people's gut feeling. And people just, if there is me and there is a white male, mid-age with a salt and pepper beard and a golden god looks like Steve Jobs, and we're both telling you something you've never heard before, and ask you to take a risk. Most people wanted to trust the other guy because my English was a bit wacky and I look a bit crazy. And, you know, I don't blame them. And I don't know any of their childhood reference, because a lot of things for graphic design, when I was working as a graphic designer in China, it's about playing with this nostalgic, like the collective shared memory, like to drill on some cues that everybody knew but kind of forget. But I don't know any English ones. Like, I didn't grow up here. And my grown-up experience, what in my memory, normally quite random to people here. Like, so I don't have an upper hand. And then I think slowly, I start to realize that. There was a time I found, this is so unfair, I want to go back home. But no, my husband didn't want to give up his career as well. So he will experience the same thing when he's in China, just as I'm doing here. So I'm not doing anything. But I'm really glad I found actually digital product design. I feel most of my creativity still get to be utilized. But that's people rely less on gut feeling. And that give me a more fair playground to play with everyone else.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's super awesome that you was able to evolve, essentially, to give yourself the best opportunity possible for yourself.
Yes, I dragged my husband into this industry as well. So now he's also in our company.
Do you know, I think that's a really, really interesting point as well, and the fact that, you know, you aren't blocked into, say you get into a specific industry or a specific type of thing that you do within an industry that isn't the be all and end all, and you do have like the scope to switch or shift or do something different and something that I guess you feel is more of your thing to do. I think a lot of people get stuck into it, you know, like I know working in certain places in the past and speaking to people and say, you know, how long have you been here?
Oh, I've been here 25 years.
Yeah,
it's like 25 years. But you don't look like you enjoy it. If I was somewhere for 25 years, I feel like I would at least have some sort of enjoyment from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel a lot like maybe a lot of people just have the stigmatism of, you know, I have to stay. this is what I do and this is my job and I'm just going to stay doing whatever this is. If they move companies, they'll do the same job, but that might not necessarily be their answer.
Well, routine is a double-edged sword, yeah? Mm. But the thing is, once you get into a routine, snap, 6 years is gone. You had a 5-year plan in place. Do you know what I mean? Routine is a double-edged sword where it can help you grind through life and it can be this positive thing, but also it can be something that lulls you into this genjutsu, this illusion where you're just in that zone where you wake up, you're in robot mode. And I catch myself doing that often. Often I catch myself in robot mode and I'm like, wow, I'm actually awake now, but all these things have already been done throughout my day. But I haven't actually grasped the concept of I am awake, I am here, I am present. Crazy.
Yeah. Autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about to 100%. Say the same thing.
Which, Stella, you may let me know, is against the Tao way.
It is? Well, the Tao's way is whatever you feel like, you think it is, it is. It's about mindset. So if routine, autopilot is your thing. Like, as long as you enjoy it, this is what you feel like to do, then this is the right thing to do. And I'm like the opposite. I always feel quite still a bit insecure about my inability of keeping any kind of routine. I literally threw a huge tantrum last night about I forgot how to play ukulele because I started it, I think, 5 years ago, and I get to a point, I think I played every day for a month, and get to a point I'm really happy about, and then I completely forgot about it. And then I pick it up recently again, and I was playing, and I'm all the way back to beginning, I'm all the way back, and I'm already insecure, and my husband left the room while I'm playing, so I'm like, do you think my music is shit? Like, how could you do that to me? And but in my deepest heart, it's just like, if I have kept going from 5 years ago till now.
Of course.
I will play something really good and he will not leave the room. Like, if somebody else was playing as what I did, I would leave the room myself as well. That's just because I didn't practice at all. So, as you say, it's a double-edged sword. I'm pretty good at adapting to change. But I wish for things like music, I can keep up a routine because there's no other way.
Well, I find that for music and language, like if you're trying to learn a language, that it's a routine that you need to really stick to really have a grasp of it and it be able to express yourself.
Oh my God, my longest Duolingo streak is like 12 days. That's kind of explained about me.
I think I've pushed it to like 14 days, but that's the max. Yeah, that's the max.
That's not too bad. Not too bad.
367.
Wow. A few of them streaks, but 100%. You would think he would be fluent in French at the minute.
I stopped practicing and now I'm like your ukulele.
Exactly. Stop. No. Imagine he had carried on now. That would have been fantastic. To have that dedication.
But I'm sure there'll be a moment where if you're in the middle of Paris and you're stuck there, I'm sure maybe there will be one part of your brain that would
activate.
One
thing for sure, I'm quite confident in my reading ability. So that's in the long-term memory. The reading is quite easy for me to comprehend written French text. But speaking and listening, mate, they might as well be speaking Chinese.
But if they lock you in a French village, nobody speaks English for a month, I'm sure, you know.
It'll be the same situation with the chopsticks. I'll be like, well, I guess I'm speaking French.
Yeah.
Do you know, I wanted to... Before we do go on, there was something that you were talking about when you was a graphics designer in China. You said the aim was to touch onto something that was a shared national experience.
Yeah, collective memory.
Yeah, what? I'd love to know, and I'd love to have an insight as to something like that. What is a collective experience for the Chinese people? one, for example, one that we would not know, I guess, not being Chinese.
Yeah. For example, our in my generation, so I'm 31 years old. So when we people in my age were like 12, between 12 to 15, like young teenagers, and we all watch, like, the TV channels are very, very little. There's just these few TV channels you can watch, and everybody off school at the same time. So when they get home, they watch the same animation. So everybody knows those Japanese animation. One is Slam Dunk.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you, yeah.
Yeah.
And that one is Detective Conan. Okay, every single person knows it. So as long as you play the theme song just the first 5 seconds, people would get triggered by that happy moment of I'm off school and something amazing gonna happen. And there are some advertisement tunes we can play with it, you know, just the first 3 tune like that, and then turn into something completely different. But that moment, you just immediately, whatever you're doing, boring dog, like paperwork, just what's that? And then it gets your attention, and that's all a good ad needs. But that's very nuanced, that's subconscious, that's just, you have to have that experience, and then you have it. And if you don't, for example, in the advertisement class, I've read, people typically ask, like, what in your memory is the most, like, memorable tooth product advertisement, and the whole classroom will probably say same one or two, and then there is me there, like, I don't know any of that.
Come some crazy Chinese brand, I hear you. Or it says made in India.
I'm trying to think what's going on. What do we have here is like collective references.
Power there. Rangers is in the same vein of
Slam Dunk.
Yeah. Did you guys have Power Rangers?
No, I only know Power Rangers when I got here.
Okay. Good old Saban. Okay. They didn't break ground in China, unfortunately.
Oh, but a similar thing, they have that Japanese one, the Ultraman. I don't know if
Ultraman.
Yeah. Ultraman was eyes like egg.
Oh gosh.
I was gonna ask a question. Is Halloween celebrated in China?
What?
Is Halloween celebrated in China?
No, that's why this Halloween, this is the second Halloween in my life I dressed up. Okay. The last one was when I was in uni. I always wondered, when I got the idea from American TV show, I'm like, this is so much fun. Because I used to go to Comic-Con to do cosplay. Oh, because I just love to dress up as somebody else. But now, somehow, when I think about, I will look at the cosplay photos, I got cringed out a little bit by it. But Halloween is like the perfect opportunity. But now,
because everybody's doing it.
Yeah, and I'm in a kind of a resourceful way. I will only do the Halloween characters with the items that I can recycle. Like, I can use it for something else. I won't. That's why Adi Wong came up. I can wear everything I bought for that character just in a normal day life.
So who was the character that you were? Adi Wong?
Yes, Adi Wong. She's half Vietnamese, half Chinese stand-up comedian. Ooh, I absolutely loved her.
She had a Netflix special where she was pregnant?
She had two. Both of her was pregnant.
Okay.
She's pregnant twice, and every time when she's hugely pregnant, she get on stage and then talk about all these like savage things. And I absolutely love that. And I dressed up as one of her special to our office Halloween themed like gathering, and then I got a lot of my colleagues freaked out, like, don't know if I'm really because there's only one person know Adi Wong and recognize me, another person kind of know you're the one in Netflix special but don't know the name. Rest of them just see, why are you all of a sudden pregnant? When was the last time I saw you? Like, what's going on?
Didn't see it in the Zoom calls.
Exactly.
So you recommend Adi Wong. Am I saying it?
Adi Wong. I mean, give it a try. It's when me and my husband watched it together the first time, and he absolutely got offended, but I'm just like, this is hilarious. And he was just like, this is, some of the things she said was disgusting. I'm like, no, I like it.
But you so also like Dave Chappelle. You also like Dave Chappelle, so I think probably in terms of like humor, we would all be in the same or similar category.
Awesome. Yeah, like joke about everything. Like if you joke about everything, that's the maximum respect to everything. And if there is a specific group that I'm not joke about, that means I'm racist against that because I think, oh, those people are weird and then cannot take a joke.
Mm. That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, quite egotistical. To some
degree. What does that mean? Egotistical. Like,
almost full of yourself. To say, do you know what? I'm not going to do a joke about them because they're going to get offended. So I'm going to make a joke about all these other guys because I assume that they won't get offended. What if people do get offended?
I think it's this view. I really like another comedian I really like is Ricky Gervais. Mm. So he basically said he made a joke about penis allergy and the community got extremely, extremely offended. And then there's a tiny little girl sending a video to him saying like, oh, Mr. Gervais, like I might die if I touch peanuts. And do you find that funny? Like, I think you shouldn't make joke about peanut allergies because people die from it. And Ricky Gervais was like, I make joke about cancer and Holocaust and you tell me basically I'm not allowed, like what's the way there is. His joke come from a very dark place. He used, like, I agree with him, joke is a cure to the most devastated situation.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
Joke on his own mother's funeral by giving the priest who's gonna give the eulogy wrong name matching to all his family members. So during that funeral, when everybody is very, very sad and very low, and then while the eulogy goes, people's shoulders just start to shake like that because everybody tried to hold back a laughter. And eventually everybody died, and these two young boys who just lost their mother are able to having a laugh, and that's what hold them to, you know, what else? Otherwise, if you don't make a joke about it, you don't try to find a sense of funny, you can trigger anger. Is anger still the answer of a lot of things? I don't think so. I think humor actually helps, because if there is honest conversation, there will be clash, and there will be you basically will confront something completely different, and very much likely everybody will be constantly uncomfortable, basically. Mm-hmm. But if we get used to that and have a laugh about it, it won't scare people of communicating further. Because one thing I hated the most, I feel, when I start working here and really live a life here, I feel people are holding me so carefully as I'm some person, and they're so afraid of offend me. So I feel I've been treated like a baby, not an adult woman who are able to, you know, banter around with people. Nobody banters with me. And I feel extremely lonely because nobody wants to offend me. And they don't know what could possibly offend me. And I don't like that. So if I put myself in other people's shoes, this is where I stand. Is I will probably say something you thought, whoa. And you're going to let me know. You're going to educate me about why that's a whoa. And then I will learn something. And then you know you will have the allowance in front of me to say something about my culture. Well, but we both kind of really aggressively entering each other's culture area, and we learn so fast and we learn such edgy things, and I enjoy that.
Mm. Yeah, I think definitely to make a joke, you know, and exactly to back up what you are saying, you need to have at least a level of understanding so you can understand, okay, although there are truth to these things, although that, you know, there's people that maybe their feelings will get hurt or they might have that whoa moment, I understand all of that and I'm consciously still making a joke.
Yeah. Trust.
Well, I knew this guy. Sorry to interrupt. I knew this guy. He was a paraplegic. He couldn't move anything, really. He had a special chair where he could just use his hand to move around. But he had, like, rods in his back. It was quite tough living. And he had this comedian who he absolutely adored. I believe the comedian's name was Jimmy Carr.
Oh, I know. He's brutal. Yeah.
He absolutely loved Jimmy. And he one day got tickets to go see Jimmy. And he was telling me all about it. And he was telling me how, like, he's made all these calls so special preparations can be made for wheelchair access. And he's going to be right in the front row because of his wheelchair access. And he was just so excited. Like, he couldn't contain himself with excitement. So he goes and sees the show. And then I see him sometime after. And I was like, oh, how was the show? And he goes to me, oh, it was one of the worst experiences of my life.
Aww.
And I was like, oh man, what happened? It was Jimmy Carr made a joke about paraplegic people.
Aww.
And it was just a bit too much.
I could hear you was choking back the laughter.
I mean, I think there are people absolutely have rights of, you know, because not everybody probably have the same amount of therapy that I have. Like, there's something they don't want to peel open the scar to face it and laugh at it. Not everyone likes this approach, which I totally understand.
But it's funny. Jimmy Carr, when you recognized who it was, you instantly knew, oh, this guy's a savage, because he makes jokes about everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay, so it's funny. You can laugh at everyone else, but when it's yourself,
when it's about you,
it's not so happy. Funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reminds me of the most recent Dave Chappelle special.
Yeah.
Where there's these two women, two Caucasian women, sat in the middle of a sea of multicultural audience.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, you can see them vibing off the energy, they're laughing, enjoying themselves. But about 20 minutes in, perhaps not even that, they're both stood there, stark face, just, I don't know if I'm happy about what I'm hearing. Did you hear what he just said?
No, I noticed. Oh, I noticed that as well.
That's probably, again, same feeling as you're in Travis Scott. Like, why am I paid for this?
I think if you're going to a comedy show, you should expect the best and the worst, because it's a comedy show.
Comedy is subjective as well.
But also, like, I think if you're in the comedy realm, like, okay, if I'm not happy about this, came up with a joke to fire it back, or not just like, oh, you're not allowed to make that joke. It's okay, that's a good one. Ouch, that hurt, almost like rap battle.
Yeah.
That hurts. I'm gonna hurt you back, but in a smart way, not like, shut up.
Do you know, honestly, I've heard a few jokes, like racial jokes against blacks, where I'm a bit like, God damn it, that's so damn hilarious.
God damn it. That's funny. Yeah, no, yes, for sure. I've had that moment where it's like, that's actually a funny joke.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of truth to it.
Which just makes me want to give something back more so than be like, you can't say that.
Because the good one is, you knew the person who tell this joke have walked the walk, or at least been that environment that really understands something. It has to be so real so that it's funny. Because if you just watch from a distance, you're not able to make those jokes. You can only make those very childish ones, like Chinese would be, ching chong chong. But that's just so weak.
Yeah.
Because
You have to come with something harder. Give me something better.
Ali Wong made one. She's half Chinese, but she made joke about our own race as well, which I absolutely adore. She basically talked about the experience of how Asian woman, how there is a trend, like Asian woman date white male. And then she basically talked about, at the end she summarized as California become a Yoko Ono factory. Because you go on the street. My husband is Caucasian. I was just like, ouch, but yes. Yeah. I get. There's some more details. If you go watch it, you'll get back to me, see if you like it or not. But that's the point. Like, it's not just scratching the surface. It burns, but it hurts so bad, but it's kind of funny. Humor is kind of pain. It's like, I feel you need to be really, really scared first. And then you have that release of fear, like, oh, actually, you know, there's no real danger. And that's really, really funny. And some joke didn't come back.
And in a way, humor is essentially a way for us to deal with the misery of the world, with the misery of existence. Like, to just be is hard. So to be able to experience laughter is so vital for the soul, I believe.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
I also agree.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear, hear. Like, laugh together is the most, like, I think the most beautiful thing. This somehow reminds me of, like, one of the first, I found it almost like magical experience I had in London. It's this kind of London, I feel it's like a racial melting pot. It's people from every culture come here. And back then I had a membership for a gym with a spa access. And there is a jacuzzi, which is a medium sized jacuzzi. Not huge. Can have like 8 people maximum. And that day, when I sit in there, I was just alone with my husband, so I'm Asian and he's Caucasian, and I was just closing my eyes and just chill a little bit. And when I opened my eyes again, the whole jacuzzi was filled with strangers, I don't know, exactly 8 people. And for my husband is white and me Asian, and then there's kind of like more tanned, either like Mexican, those kind of people, and a whole skin tone gradient towards the other side is somebody black. I opened my eyes, I was just like, wow, it's all this steam, and I'm in the jacuzzi with not a single person in this jacuzzi have the same skin tone, and that was just amazing. And at that moment, I was thinking, if somebody could crack a joke and everyone here laugh together, that would be awesome. But nobody said anything. Everybody just kept in that awkward silence.
It's London.
Is there anything, I guess, before... and thank you so much for coming and being a part of it. It's been amazing. Definitely, I think, first of many. It would be nice to continue to chop it up. And, you know, I think you alluded to some more stuff that you hope to share. And
yes, this YouTube.
Going with on your YouTube channel, but we'll leave that special moment and just say, you know,
for her, yeah, that's fair. Our exclusive, ours, hers, and hers.
Absolutely.
But is there anything in particular that I guess you would like to shout out or share?
I mean, I just want to shout out this. Thanks for having me, Mo. And I feel when we did our interview one-to-one before, I already have loads of fun. I have a lot of fun. And today is just like triple the fun. It's just so much more input from... It's similar vibe from a different perspective. And I really enjoy that. I feel these conversations are one of my biggest entertainment. Like rather than a festival, clubbing or anything. Have a conversation like this. Have a chat like this. It's amazing, and I'm really happy always to chatting with you. And thank you for introducing me to Osma and, oh my God, the other sage. Who is the other sage? Osma and...
Oh, Bobo.
Bobo?
Ungongo. Ungongo.
Ungongo. Really? Yeah, that's a real name? Yeah. Oh.
Ungogo.
Ungogo.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
No, I'm teasing it. I'm teasing. It's AJ or Okello.
Okello.
But one thing I do want is a Chinese expression to teach us, please. And then you have to judge who's the best one out of the three.
Teacher.
So I would like for you to teach the three of us a Chinese expression, a Mandarin expression.
Ah, okay.
Then you have to judge who has the best pronunciation.
Okay. Okay. This one. 不明觉厉. 不明觉厉.
I'll happily go first. 不明觉厉.
Okay. Next.
Can we get a repeat, please?
Or is it?
不明觉厉.
Oh, I said ling. All right, ling.
Okay. Okay. I'm about to go straight in. 不明觉厉.
Li. Yeah, Mo got the first two almost perfect, like a native. And then the last one is Li. And this means I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but it sounds quite awesome.
Nice. Go on, AJ.
不明觉厉.
Yes, 不明觉厉.
Yes,
perfect.
不明觉厉.
Yeah. It's kind of internet, more, it's something invented by Chinese millennials. It's not always there, but it's an acronym and it's very, very popular. You speak to a Chinese grandpa, he might seem a bit confused, but somebody who is in our age, they would impress, I think. They would be impressed.
Thank you for that.
Okay, I'm going to use that, definitely.
Awesome. Wow. I was, to be honest, getting very sleepy before our chat, but now I'm so excited I need to find a way to calm down.
Just go play some ukulele, maybe.
right. Yeah. Good job.
Now might be the perfect time.
You're going to have to perform a ukulele song on here, definitely at one point.
Do you know what? So I have a super quick story of like a guitar, because I used to play, similar to you, Stella, I used to play years ago, but I stopped, I'd say for a year, I didn't play. Recently, I'd say last week, I finally cracked it open, I opened up the bag, I put the tuner on it, the tuner still has battery, I'm like, oh, let's do this. So as I'm tuning it, it gets to the final string, and I break it without playing a single proper note, a single song, I'm like, Yeah, 100%. And it's acoustic guitar, so it's all fiddly to fix it. Oh, man.
Yeah.
We've got another one, so I'm going to practice, but it did remind me of that.
If I manage to keep up with my practice, maybe one day we could jam.
Yes, we'll jam together.
Yeah. And I will sing in French.
Oh! And what would Mo would rap?
Oh, racial stereotypes out here.
What's my worst? Like, in my first conversation with you, I already pull out the N-word. Like, from
the first thing, oh, what's up, my ninja?
Actually, Mo's pretty amazing at Chinese opera.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
You know, I try and keep a couple of secrets about me. We are not going to go through that today.
Excuses for exclusives.
Definitely get something we'll keep that one for the exclusive that's going to be after the other exclusive.
Oh my god, this will be something that will hit certain amount like subscribers. It needs to be a high number. A Chinese opera singing in French, a post guitar.
We'll do it. Stella, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I really appreciated having you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Keep doing your thing. Stay beautiful.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art.
Pariama Ba, 1929 to 1981. Pariama Ba is a Senegalese writer and political activist. In her writing, she denounced the status of women in Senegalese society, violence against women, lack of opportunities for women, and polygamy. She became a staunch advocate for changing laws and traditions that subjugate women.
With calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own. Which path do you follow? Until next time.